It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
We know that America is fine. America is fine because America is in God's hands. We've just had a hard-fought midterm election, and one thing is certain, we the people are the winners. There were no real surprises in the results. The president's party almost always loses seats at midterm. And given the nonstop negative media attacks on President Trump from CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CBS, and we can go on and on, the only real surprise is that Republicans did better than expected, and the widely anticipated blue wave became a small ripple. Americans win because we get the divided government that some Americans prefer. Divided government is when power is shared between the political parties. There's still some undecided elections, so we don't know the final total, but one thing is certain, Democrats will control the House and Republicans the Senate. In fact, Republicans have solidified their power and increase their numbers in the Senate. I see this midterm election as a win-win for President Trump. Control of the Senate will make it a lot easier for him to get his nominees confirmed. Divided government can work to his advantage when it comes to the 2020 presidential elections. President Trump will be in a great position to hold the House accountable for any obstruction it engages in, especially if their new focus is on investigations rather than legislating in areas such as immigration, health care reform, and improving our nation's infrastructure. If, as expected, Nancy Pelosi is elected as Speaker, Maxine Waters becomes Chair of the Banking Committee, Adam Schiff, a Trump hater, takes over the Intelligence Committee, and Jerry Nadler, the House Judiciary Committee, and their focus becomes politics, this could become very interesting if their political focus is on impeaching the president and obstructing his ability to govern rather than solving America's problems. We have a lot to watch, a lot to pray about in the days and weeks ahead, but I still believe America is fine. Joining me today in this special post-election coverage are two special guests who are well positioned to give us some valuable insights on what happened and what lies ahead. My first guest is Nancy Schultz. Now, Nancy is a go-getter who really knows how to make things happen. She is the founder of Women Impact in America, the Republican Congressional Wives Speakers Club, and she is the wife of nine-term former Congressman Dick Schultz of Pennsylvania. I met Nancy last month when she invited me to participate in the Women for Mark Harris and Women for Ted Budd bus tours. I'm pleased to report that both candidates were elected. Mark will represent North Carolina's 9th district, and Ted Budd will represent North Carolina's 13th congressional district. He will continue to represent that district. Right now, you're listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Now, you'll be able to find this show and all of my shows on Podcasts on Demand by listening on Apple or Android free apps or iHeartRadio or on our media player on any browser anywhere in the world. So I welcome to the show my friend, Nancy Schultz.
Carol, it is a pleasure and an honor to be with you this today on your We the People show, and I want to congratulate you for your show and also congratulate you for your new weekly column in the Epoch Times that, as I understand it, will start this week. Your voice is such an important voice in our country, Carol, and I'm just thrilled to know that others are recognizing how important your voice is and that you're getting an opportunity to speak to a wider and wider audience. It seems like almost weekly. So thank you for inviting me to visit with you today about the, what has transpired in the last, 24 hours now.
Well, I mean, it's actually still going on because some of the races are undecided. Mm-hmm. I don't believe all the candidates have conceded.
Correct. There's, I think there are still, at this point, there are about 40 seats still to be decided. So we've got a ways to go. But I'll tell you something, Carol. The left went to work on November of 2016, the veritable second that Donald Trump won. The left began to strategize and plan and plot, and they, including former President Obama, who very quietly and under the radar trained over 50,000 new community organizers. That is a huge, huge army of boots on the ground. And it proved to be very, very effective. I do know that one of Hillary Clinton's former inner circle advisors came up with, by January, there was a 59-page strategic plan for how to accomplish what they accomplished right now. There were some wake-up calls in around the country last night. Huge losses, the fact that Dave Brat lost. He's a brilliant intellectual, understands the broader worldview of what we're dealing with in this country. He's an economics professor. He understands the economy. He understands the left. And I know Dave will be back. He's a brilliant guy. So anyway, we've got from Virginia, the Richmond area. Carol, your candidate and mine won last night. Both of them won last night.
I know they did.
And
that was so exciting.
We worked hard.
And that bus tour was your idea, and it really did make the difference, because when they start attacking Republican male candidates, you know, because of their position on marriage and the family, or in this particular case with Mark Harris, he had been a pastor of First Baptist Charlotte. And so the opponents pulled a scripture or a quote out of context, and they tried to beat him up with that.
Well, that's one of the reasons I decided to do the tour is I know Mark. I've known him for several years. I don't know him well, but I know that he's a constitutional conservative and obviously a deeply committed Christian. And he had a leading Baptist church in downtown Charlotte for years and years. He was very, very well respected, a solid citizen. Common sense, high intellect. He understands things from a worldview perspective, and I really want to talk about this worldview perspective because Americans right now seem to be all over the map in terms of what they understand about government and the form of government that we were blessed to receive from our founders. But let's just flip back to Mark Harris for just a second, because his race actually did, it was something of a microcosm of what happened throughout the country. And that is that the left recruited a Marine Iraq War veteran who was 35 years old, not particularly steeped in political savvy, but his father was one of the leading trial attorneys in Charlotte, for sure, if not North Carolina. And the trial attorney money that came into that race from throughout the country was mind-boggling. Nancy Pelosi put $350,000 into his race. Some of his major contributors were major contributors to the Clinton Foundation. And yet he ran as a moderate. To hear him speak, you would think he was Republican-liked. And that's the kind of, I'm sure they had candidate training schools all over the country. It sounds like, I know that there were several races in the country where far left candidates were sounding as if they were moderate and even to the right. But what happens, Carol, when, and you know this, I said it umpteen times on our bus tour in North Carolina, when we send a member of Congress to Washington, they will vote an average of 82% of the time in accordance with their party's platform. In other words, all these new Democrats that are going into Washington will learn in a heartbeat that you do not cross the Democrat leadership. You just don't do it. If you attempt to cross them, if you don't fall in line with the party line, you will not receive the committee assignments you want. You won't receive financial backing for your reelection. You won't receive, you won't get a bill heard. You will be rendered impotent. And that is something that carries tremendous, tremendous weight. Now, we on the right don't have those rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you this. Because they did misrepresent themselves to the electorate, or maybe in some cases they really were a little bit more to the right of the most extreme leftists, don't you think because it's a two-year term that we can really hold them accountable, that those...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we have to strategize in such a way that they don't get away with anything, that we're watching them on all the things that they promised and making sure that they deliver in a way that we have not done so in the past, maybe.
Well, the one thing that the American electorate seems to be very unforgiving of is hypocrisy. And if these quote-unquote moderates go to Washington and begin to toe the party line, which they will need to do, and it's, you know, my husband served for 18 years in Congress, and it's a very, people are pulling and pushing from every direction 24/7. It never lets up. It never lets up. And the pressure that is on a member of Congress is from all factions is intense. And when these young pups get to, and I don't mean by age, but when freshmen, we refer to first term members of Congress as freshmen for a reason. They they usually don't start getting your feet to the ground until you're reelected, until after your first reelection. But I mean, it takes if you've ever been in the Capitol, it takes a while to even figure out what passageway to take to get to vote.
I mean, imagine.
It is mind-boggling. It's a maze under the Capitol. So anyway, it takes a while to get oriented. Now, next week in Washington will be freshman orientation, where all the new members and their wives will go through freshman orientation, and they'll start to be exposed to some of the things that they may not have anticipated, just like where to get from A to B. But what we need to understand as the American electorate is that the two-party platforms, now, when I say that 82% of all members of Congress will vote in concert with their party's platform, we had better understand what those two party platforms stand for. And we could not have two more radically different visions for the future of this country than what is represented by those two party platforms. Are we going to be a constitutional republic as we were founded to be? Or are we, is our constitution going to fall to the whim of leftist judges? Are we going to have an economy that's based on free enterprise and capitalism, or are we going to continue this slide into socialism? And we are, as a country, sliding into socialism. Are we going to be a sovereign nation with sovereign borders? And are we going to be a sovereign people? Or are we going to open our borders and drift into globalism? Are we going to be a country where God is God or government is God? Now, you will remember back in the Democrat National Convention, not the last one, but the one before.
I remember.
Where the issue, you remember that,
they booed,
Carol, where they booed including the word God in their party platform once. It the issue came to the floor. How they ever let that issue come to the floor, I'll never know. But we all saw this huge boo that came up from the floor of the Democrat National Convention over the issue of including the word God.
Well, it seems to me,
in the party platform.
Yeah, it seems to me that the Democratic Party has been totally taken over by leftists, and the real question ahead is whether or not the people that are left in the party with sounder minds, if they will be able to regain control. We're going to take a brief break, and when I return, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about what you think the governance will look like in the weeks and months ahead.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers. I'm back with my guest, Nancy Schultz, and Nancy is a wife of a 9-term former congressman, and she's given her insights about the election and what we can expect in the weeks and months ahead.
Well, Carol, if we were looking for more cooperation and compromise, I think we're all going to be grossly disappointed. The people that are now going to be in charge of the some major committees in the House are not. They are members. They are part of the radical left that I was just the far left that I was just talking about in the last segment. They are not about cooperation. Obviously, I mean, we saw no cooperation whatsoever from the Democrat caucus. In that they hang together, as I was mentioning in the last segment, they have every incentive in the world to hang together and to not stray from the party line, stray from Mrs. Pelosi's, you vote the way Mrs. Pelosi tells you to vote or else.
Don't you think it's very dangerous for them, though? That it's very dangerous for them to be seen as obstructionists, given that President Trump is so effective with communicating to the public, you know, using Twitter and his...
Oh, well, you would think it would be hard to get away with it, but when you've got 90% of all the donations of higher education, teachers and professors of higher education in this country donate to Democrat members, Democrat candidates, 90%, when you've got 92% of all the mainstream media coverage about the president is negative. There are some powerful, powerful allies that are that have the ear of the American public. Now, let me just sit for a second on education in America. We have got to decide whether we are going to educate our children or if we are going to continue to allow our children to be indoctrinated instead of educated. And that is what has been going on in this country for decades.
I agree.
And I'm not exaggerating.
I agree.
Well, you know, John...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, remember John Dewey, who is considered to be the father of modern American education.
Yes.
He was a socialist and an atheist who believed that truth is something that grows and changes with the changing times. Now, if you're wondering where we're getting this, I heard Hillary Clinton in March of 2000, either 15 or 16, I was so shocked that I sat down immediately and wrote down what she said on television. And she said, our Constitution was intended to grow and change as our hearts do, more fair, more free, more just. Well, all of that, if you put a leftist spin on all of that, means the Constitution is a completely different document than the ones that our founders intended. But well, law schools and universities throughout this country have been training and teaching that the Constitution is should grow and change with the change. It's a constitution, Carol.
I know, but I mean, they're doing the same thing with the Bible. It moved from the Constitution
exactly.
being a living document to the Bible being a living document that changes with the culture and times. You can make it mean whatever you want it to mean.
Well, you can. If you want to selectively choose, if you want to cherry pick scripture, you can make that Bible say anything you want it to say. And that is what is happening in churches throughout this country. George Soros had busloads of pastors who went around in the last 2 months, going around to 31 different cities in this country. Pastors who believe, who are preaching that Jesus was a socialist.
I know.
And it cannot continue. Now, the one, the Achilles heel of the left is the evangel of the Christian community. If they can get past the Christian community, if they can divide the Christian community, if they go for the jugular, and if they are successful, they will conquer America.
I mean,
they will transform.
They have already divided the Christian community. I see it in the Southern Baptists. And if you go back to Saul Alinsky, part of his strategies that he advocated was infiltration, manipulation, and deception. The political left believes
right.
that the ends justify the means, and they have set their sights on the church as being one of the main barriers standing between them and their agenda to take over America.
The church, Carol, is the brass ring. If they can conquer and if they can divide and conquer the church, they've got America where they want her, and they will succeed. Now, the church, this is why I mentioned worldview in the first segment a couple of times. Worldview is what your worldview is it's the way that you perceive, it's the lens through which you perceive life. And if you're seeing life through a secular lens, you are going, if you do not believe in God, if you do not, or if you believe in a God, a socialist God, okay, now that is an oxymoron, because socialism and communism make eventually, and Nazism and all of those isms may appear to embrace Christianity as in the outset. They may appear to embrace. Hitler.
I mean, that's the deception part. That's the deception part.
That's exactly right. But then, once they have the church colludes with the government, which is what we have done. We have the church. Jesus never said, "Give your money to Caesar."
Right.
Or in our case, Uncle Sam. He never said, "Give your money to Caesar and let Caesar handle the problems of the poor, or let Caesar heal the sick." What did he say? He said, "You, Mr. Samaritan, you cross the street and help your neighbor in need." And that is the way that our brother Jesus set things up, is that we care for our neighbors in need. We know the neighbors. For instance, we know our neighbors. We know who really needs help. Or if we don't know our neighbors, we need to to know our neighbors. Who really needs a helping hand, and who, is playing the system.
Right.
And you help those who really, really need a helping hand. Right now, Carol, 72 million Americans have fallen into Medicaid. When we know, you and I were just at a conference last week in Washington, D.C. with a bunch of doctors leaders of physicians organizations from around the country, there's a growing body of very convincing evidence that people on Medicaid have worse health care outcomes than those who have no insurance at all.
Nancy, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised by any of that because, you know, part of my background is poverty, and I've seen people that have had to rely on Medicaid, and it's never been a great program.
No, it's not. The more the government gets control over the health care of the American people, the more they are going to be dictating who gets treatment, how,
right,
when, and at what age, and at
right,
what age. And if you see the treatment curve, the age curve for how healthcare dollars will be allocated, if you're over 70 or under the age of 10, you just better watch out.
I agree.
With the American healthcare system,
well,
it's gradually but very, very dramatically changing, and we cannot continue to let this happen.
Well, we're going to have another show, and I will have you back on where we can talk about the healthcare problem and some of the issues that were covered at that conference. Right now, we are coming to the end of this segment, and I would like for you to tell our listeners how they can contact you or any information you would like them to have.
Well, I speak around the country, and I speak a lot about our founding, the founding of the country, and how our founding principles and our constitutional roots have unraveled over time, and what it will take to reclaim, to redeem, and rebuild this country. We've had a setback. The president is a very, very resourceful guy.
Well, do you have?
He's got to hand it to him.
Could you give us your email or?
What I will do is the speaking email is speaker1776. @verizon.net. Speaker1776 @verizon.net. And that's the speaking email if anybody would like to hear more. I've got a lot.
Nancy, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your views. And I look forward to having you back on again.
Okay, Carol, and once again, congratulations for your new column in the Epoch Times. I can hardly wait to read what you've got cooked up, and congratulations on this show. And Carol, you're one of the real heroes of our culture, and I have nothing but respect and admiration for the way that you have pulled yourself out of poverty and done such an incredible job of contributing to this country. You are a phenomenon, Carol.
Thank you.
I'm just honored to know you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So we have had a great session here with Nancy Schultz, who is a real insider because she was married to a 9-term congressman. And in our next segment, we'll talk with Pastor Stephen Broden. And Pastor Broden is an expert on progressivism. But before that, we'll take a break.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We're back on Be the People with Pastor Stephen Broden. Pastor Broden is the senior pastor at Fair Park Bible Fellowship. He's the co-founder of the National Black Pro-Life Coalition and president and founder of Protect Life and Marriage in Texas. He also is an expert on progressivism and Marxism. He believes that progressivism and the Democratic Party are synonymous and that there is an agenda to exploit Black Americans. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. You can find all my shows on podcasts on demand by listening on Apple or Android's free apps or iHeartRadio or on our media player on any browser around the world. So welcome, Pastor Broden. What do you make of what happened last night?
Well, it's good to be with you. And certainly last night was a wake-up call, I believe, for those of us who are a part of the conservative movement in America, those who are constitutionalists, Tea Party patriots, those who are lovers of liberty, we have a wake-up call. And it is a call to recognize that we have to be engaged all the time. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that says that that liberty has to be fought for. And what we're facing in terms of the outcome yesterday is a divided government that will be caught in a quicksand of fights and struggles between two ideologies that will not advance the cause of liberty in our nation.
Well, let me say this. So, mm-hmm. I'm not quite as pessimistic, and part of that has to do with the fact that throughout our history, the American people seem to prefer divided government. And when President Trump had unified government, he had the House and the Senate, then he had to fight Republicans as well as Democrats. And I kind of think that just having the Democrats controlling one House will allow him, you know, to really be able to hold an institution accountable, but it will put pressure on Republicans to stand up and fight for the president's agenda. So that's my positive spin on what happened.
No, I agree with you. I think that it seems to historically be a preference for divided government, and that when President Trump had the House and the Senate, that There were a few things that he was not able to get through, but there were quite a few things that he was able to pass, like tax cuts and the economy is up and running, because he had the kind of support coming from the two houses. In this case here, I think this divided situation is going to force compromise, is going to force a need to have cross-aisle conversations and meeting of the mind, if you will, to pursue those things that are germane to helping us to maintain our liberties and to make our country run smoothly. I think that's an important part of the process, but nonetheless, there will be an ideological difference.
Right.
And how you cross that difference, how you handle those differences is the issue that is at hand. But in the environment that we have today, which is a polarized, contentious environment, and partly because there is a mistrust of the president on the part of the Democrats, there is a sense that he cheated to win the presidency through collusion with the Russians. And so there's this suspicion, and this polarization is
right.
The thing that's going to be amplified over the next 2 years, unfortunately. And so we got to see that, yes, it is the will of the people for a divided government. Obviously, they voted that way. But in the environment in which we're in presently, it's going to be a bumpy ride for the next 2 years. Most Americans are not fully aware of the degree to which our nation is in trouble with respect to its philosophies, the Constitution being undermined, our Judeo-Christian ethic being replaced by a human secularistic idea. Are not fully aware of that, to the degree to which that is happening in America. And this may, in fact, become the alarm clock, the red flag, if you will, that will cause them to recognize the need for us to be more engaged and more involved in the political process.
I hope so, because it seems to me that the Democratic Party has pretty much become totally secularist, and that they even try to impose a religious test on Christians before they, before they will appoint them to positions. They will fight against anyone that is a Bible-believing Christian when it comes to political appointments.
Well, certainly they instituted the litmus test, if you will, and so their litmus test is that if anyone is a evangelical, born-again, Bible-believing Christian, they cannot even be a part of their party. But there is something that's good to come out of this. I really, as I look at the process, Dr. Swain, that what President Trump did in terms of going out and campaigning as hard as he did, and we watched him go from one city to the next city campaigning during this cycle, what he did, I believe, was stop the blue wave.
I agree.
From coming.
I agree.
And his hard work really stopped our country from becoming a socialistic or communist paradigm, because if they would have won the House and the Senate, our government would have changed completely. But he was able to stop them from getting control of the Senate and actually gain seats in the Senate, and that stopped this so-called blue wave of socialism and a changing of our values completely in this nation.
Well, do you have any ideas about what we the people can do when it comes to the media? I have been traveling, and in the airports, the hotel lobbies, it's CNN all the time, and nonstop negative criticisms of the president, calling him a white nationalist, calling him, divided in chief. I have yet to hear anything positive on CNN about the president.
Well, that's true. In fact, you'll rarely find it on any of the ABCs, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC. They have been incredibly negative about this administration, and they seem to be in the hip pockets of the progressives and the liberals, and they're advancing an ideology that's antithetical to the founding principles that made this nation great. They are looking, in fact, I would say that they are globalists, and they're seeking to move our nation into a more of a globalist position as opposed to nationalism and patriotism for American values and for American principles. We're not seeing that coming from the media, any of them, with the exception of Fox, and you have to look at them with a jaundiced eye every now and then. But there is a need for us as American citizens, and through innovation and creativity, to come up with alternatives to providing means of communicating a message to the American people that will circumvent the traditional forms, the left-leaning media in America. We've got to come up, we've got to be creative. I think your program here is one of those ways to do that. And there are other ways that we can incorporate, including some of our entrepreneurs and businessmen can start buying up some of these media outlets and then instituting objective principles and ideas so that we can not get this kind of one-sided filter of progressivism that is polluting the airwaves with a move away from our Judeo-Christian principles to the embracement of this human secular idea that is sourced in communism and socialism.
Well, that gives me an opportunity to tell you that I have been offered a column, a regular column, in the Epoch Times. And that's an international newspaper that's based in New York City. And it's one of the few newspapers in America that offers a balanced treatment of the president, totally anti-communist. And it's called the Epoch, E-P-O-C-H, Times. And my column will be the Be the People column.
Well, congratulations. Your voice is absolutely needed to provide an alternative perspective. And that perspective in a periodical like that is absolutely essential to providing an alternative perspective on politics and on government in America in particular.
Now tell me, tell our listeners about the book that you wrote that deals with the progressivism. I don't remember the exact title, but
It's called Pawns of Change, The Exploitation of Black Americans by the Progressive Liberals. It's an analysis, if you will, of how the progressives have used the black community and poor communities to advance their agenda in America. We are where we are in America with respect to progressivism, socialism, and the ideas of communism that are evident within our public square is because the progressive movement, which I believe is a socialistic movement, has utilized principles that were crafted by Saul Alinsky and his Rules for Radicals to embrace and to use, and exploit is a better word, to exploit the plight and the circumstances of the poor to advance their agenda. And, of course, the black community is where they have targeted most of their effort and emphasis in order to rally them and organize them to be used as, quote-unquote, what Saul Alinsky calls a battering ram against the system.
It's all laid out in their Marxist literature.
Well, absolutely. They're not hiding it. It's just that we're not aware of what's going on. And my book is an attempt to try to bring this understanding to the black community that there is indeed a manipulation that's going on by the Democratic Party and the progressive movement to use them to advance their agenda. But it seems on the surface that they're advancing our concern, but they're not.
When
we look at what has happened over the last 54 years since the signing of the civil rights legislation, the Democratic Party has advanced its agenda, and nothing has really changed within the black community with respect to economic development, the shoring up to traditional values. Our families are disintegrating. Our men are being locked up. Our women are in single-parent households, and we're constantly giving our voice and our vote to the progressives, and they've done nothing to answer the needs and the concerns of our community.
But do you believe that this Blexit movement by Candace Owen and Brandon Strzok's walkaway movement, that it's real, the changes that are being reported in the black community when it comes to their favorability towards President Trump?
I think it's a positive beginning, but it's only a beginning. There's a lot of work that has to be done to try to break the grip of progressivism in the black community. And it's going to have to start with the GOP, with the Republican Party. In one of the chapters I have in my book is called Politics in Black and White. It says this at the very beginning: the worst political blunder of all times, the success of progressive liberals to pursue their exploitive agenda within the black neighborhood, is made possible by the gross neglect of the Republican Party.
Right.
The failure of the Republicans to engage the community with their message leaves the mantra of the left unchallenged. The only voice that comes into our community that defines who the Republicans are from progressive Democrats. They tell us who they are, what they believe, and we just eat it all up. Well, and it goes unchallenged because
right.
the Republicans won't come into the community and they won't talk to us.
Well, I mean, President Trump is certainly trying to change that. But if you look at the results of this last election, where it looks like certainly Gillum in Florida, you know, he fell short. He came very close. And then Abrams in Georgia, I don't believe she's conceded. But those were not especially strong black candidates. The fact that they have lost will be used by the political left to accuse Republicans of racism.
Oh, absolutely. It certainly will. They came close only because there was this kind of monolithic vote coming out of the black community. That has got to stop. In close races where there isn't the controversy that we had that was going on in Florida and in Georgia, in close races, blacks have a tendency to tip the balance towards the liberals if they've come out to vote. That will not change until we go into the community and start educating and informing them of the need for them to understand what progressivism is, the failure of the Democrats to answer the needs of our community, and the desire for us to have the kind of platform that will address those issues.
Well, do you believe
until that happens?
But are they willing to listen? I mean, I know that you are out there. You have your book. I don't know about the racial makeup of your congregation, but you're a pretty big voice. And there are some other black conservatives trying to advise the Republican Party. But are the people willing to listen?
I think that there are some who are willing to listen. We're going to have to earn the right to be heard. And that means there has to be an investment made. An investment means not only of time and talent, but also of treasure. If you take a look at what happened during this election cycle, literally multi-millions of dollars were pumped into the black community to rally them to come out to vote. Literally billionaires and millionaires across this country invested money into the Democratic Party for the purpose of rallying black folks and minorities to come out to vote.
But you know what the Democrats do is they give walking around money, that's cash money, to certain leaders, and those leaders urge their followers in the black community to get out and vote. Some of them are effective and some of them are just taking the money, but Republicans are not likely to pass out walking around money. So
no, they don't need to pass out walking around money. What they need to do is to invest in the conservative black movement that has plans and strategies for going into the community through information, education, and activation, through the designs that they have. Our designs are oftentimes ignored, and they are not listening to what we have said to them is the best way to go into the community.
Well, I know the RNC.
It's going to take money to do it, but they're not willing to make that kind of investment.
Well, the RNC is not listening, but what about President Trump himself? Do you have his ear, or do any of the black conservatives that actually know what's happening in the world have his ear? Because I am in a position to mostly hear blacks who are saying the same thing that you're saying, is that the Republicans leadership, that they out of touch, and they're not necessarily listening to the black conservatives like you or me that actually have a firm understanding of what's taking place in America.
I would say President Trump does not have the ear of the black conservative. We are available to him, but what we have to do is to wade through all of the black liberals who have crossed over into our party, who do not understand conservatism, limited government, understand our platform. They're just coming over, and they don't. And he is talking to them instead of talking to the foot soldiers who've been in this war for a long time, who know the strategy. He's not talking to K. Cole James. He's not talking to Star Parker. He's not talking to me or Johnny Hunter. He's talking to these new black Republicans who have come over, who followed him over.
And he's relatively new as a Republican. I'm thinking about Candace Owens and Omarosa. And, you know, Candace is young. You know, she's just out of the gate, but she's not a Republican in the traditional sense. And with Omarosa, and as much as I respect the president, I believe that God opened the door for his election. It seems like he has very poor judgment when it comes to the kinds of people he surrounds himself with. He has made so many mistakes, and I hope during this next 2 years that he will try harder to get in touch with the real people on the ground.
Right. I would say it's new to him, just like it's new to Candace. It's new to him to be a conservative, and if he doesn't have the right people around him who is advising him, then he's going to draw conclusions that may not be the best. Right now, he's not talking to the black conservatives who understand how to best take our message into the community. Omarosa was a liberal when he found her and was a liberal when she left. Candace is a newfound conservative, and she's learning. She's in the learning process. She's an articulate and gifted spokesperson, but she still supports same-sex marriage, as I understand, and she still supports a woman's right to choose. Those issues do not work with black conservatives.
Right, and I know that you've done a lot with the pro-life movement, and in the black community, if conservatives were doing what Planned Parenthood does and what the Democrats push, they would be calling it genocide, and they would be correct.
Well, absolutely. But again, the issue is money. There needs to be investment not only of time and talent, but it has to be treasure as well. And we don't have the kind of resources to compete with Planned Parenthood, who gets $550 million annually to craft their message and to pump that message into our community.
Well, as far as getting
billionaires, Bloomberg out of New York gave over $100 million to the Democrats to help them win the House.
Well, you're
who's doing that on our side?
Okay, you're a pretty brilliant guy. So tell me what we as black conservatives, and not just black conservatives, because I work with everybody, and so it's not just black conservatives; it's conservatives, period, that sometimes feel shut out of the Trump administration. So how do we get his attention? Do we have to resort to leftist tactics, not their, you know, more absurd tactics, but how do we get the president's attention so that he would at least listen to what we have to say? I don't have any more access than you do, but I do have a platform.
Well, we do have blacks within his administration. Somehow we need to talk to Ben Carson. Somehow we need to sit down with others who are in his administration who are black, who have access to his ear. We need to talk to Alveda King, who he talks to all the time. Try to get Alveda to recognize the need for him to have a summit with black conservatives.
Well, here's the problem.
And we can identify who those conservatives are for her, so he can have, instead of bringing all those pastors he brought into the White House the other week, other month, and half of them were liberals.
Well, here's the other thing, is that with Ben Carson and Alveda King, for whatever reason, they are used like window dressing. And so it's not clear. I don't know what they have pushed, you know, privately with the president. We don't have access to that. But at the same time, it's more like a photo op, that if you really get serious about trying to reach the black community and changing hearts and minds for conservatism, that requires a totally different strategy, and it can't be about me, or it can't be about you, or an individual personality.
Right.
We have to get to the point where we care about the country as a whole, about black people as a whole, but the nation, unifying the nation, and returning to those Judeo-Christian values and principles, and until we figure out how to do that, I think we're going to be on the outside with our noses pressed up against the glass.
I'm saying that we don't have to. I think we have not tried the approach where we go to Ben Carson and say, here's what we think need to happen, Ben, and here's how you can use your position of influence on behalf of the community. We haven't sat down with Alveda King and said, Alveda, here's what we think needs to happen and how you can use your position of influence to open up a door for us to sit down and talk about a long-term strategy of developing and nurturing a relationship within the community that will break the stranglehold of the liberal left. We've got to use every opportunity to try to reach past President Trump while we can.
Well, I mean, I just delegated to you the role of setting up that meeting. I'll be happy to participate in it. So let me know when it's set up so that I can help you organize.
Well, we're certainly trying to do that, and we've got efforts now trying to reach Ben Carson. We believe is the best opportunity to reach the ear of the president and get him to agree to bring a special group of black strategists together to sit down and talk about the best way to reach into the black community to break this stranglehold. We've got to do it.
Well, that's
and
plan
you're
A.
Part of that. You're part of that, not on the sideline, but you're an intimate part of that.
That's effort. Plan A. That's plan A. What about plan B? And I think plan B probably has to involve some of the people like that Pastor Jeffries in Dallas that actually has access, and some of the other people that have access to the president. And so I think we need to have plan A and plan B and keep pushing until we get that audience.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that, and that's a good plan B. We have friends in the Republican Party who understand the urgency of the hour, the necessity for the broadening of the base of the Republican Party. We've got to include minorities and black, Latino, and others into the party in order for us to beat back this blue wave that is constantly developing momentum. So we need to talk to them and talk to them about supporting efforts that are ongoing right now. For example, we are planning training and development components for new black Republicans who are coming into the conservative movement to give them training on what is fiscal responsibility, what are the ideas of conservatism, why the Constitution is important to our struggle, and all of that. We got a lot of blacks who are coming over, but they're coming over as liberals, and someone needs to train them. Some of them needs to bring them up to speed. Literature and information has to be created. DVDs, blogospheres, websites, those kinds of things. It costs money to do stuff like that. And so we need to have our Republican friends who have deep pockets that can, we don't have to wait for Donald Trump. We can get them to buy into and support our efforts as well.
Tell us how we can get in contact with him.
You can contact me at the Fair Park Bible Fellowship Church in Dallas, Texas, 75223. Our phone number at the church is 214-826-0018. 214-826-0018.
Thank you so much for spending part of your time today with us, and I look forward to working with you to implement some of the things we discussed.
You bet. It's a pleasure being with you today, and I'm certain that we've got our challenge before us, but we've got God on our side. Greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world.
Amen. Thank you for joining this post-election show. And until next time, remember that we the people can be the people who change America.